Blessed are the rich. Blessed are the famous. Blessed are the talented. Blessed are the powerful. Blessed are the beautiful. Blessed are the popular. Those would probably be the Beatitudes of the world. See, people in our culture, they normally think of the blessed, the fortunate ones, as the pop stars and the movie stars and the sports stars and things like that. But, okay, are these the things that bring true satisfaction and blessedness in life? As I've said, I think if you read the tabloids, you know the answer to that. It amazes me how many of the rock stars I used to listen to as a teenager who have either committed suicide or overdosed. Okay, here's a way to think about it. Since we just had Christmas, and it's the 21st century, there were a lot of packages being delivered to people's homes. Now, one of the more irritating things is when a package gets stolen by porch pirates, as we like to call them. How many of you have had something taken, or you suspect something taken? Okay, a few of you. I read one statistic that said more than 25 million Americans have their packages stolen by porch pirates each year. And so there are quite a few people who have had enough. And there are a number of videos on YouTube on this. They have started filling boxes with different things, like old phone books or dirty diapers or animal droppings or even glitter bombs, and they leave them on the porch. You know, they leave them out there for the porch pirates who get a nasty surprise when they get home. Okay, the thing is, many of us are like those thieves. Because you see, we grab at things in this world that we think will bring us satisfaction, only to find that they don't turn out to be what we thought. So what is it that will bring true satisfaction and blessedness in life? Well, that's what Jesus talked about in his introduction to the Sermon on the Mount. So, all right, let's be turning back there to Matthew chapter 5. So we're continuing our series on the Beatitudes, the values and virtues of the kingdom of God, which are often very different from those of the kingdom of man. See, sometimes people refer to it as the upside-down kingdom. We'll have a graphic, you know, something like this. It's been said that the sinful world is like a turtle that's been flipped on its back and it doesn't know which way is up. And to live in the upside-down kingdom of Christ is actually to live right side up. Now, again, those of us who have grown up in the church, we have heard the Beatitudes so many times that we often don't think anymore about how shocking and counterintuitive they seem. I like the way Harold Fowler, how he put it in his commentary. He said the conditions that Jesus represent as blessed are those which his listeners had always considered as curses. Thus, he clearly intends to surprise and whet their interest with these unexpected lightning bolts from heaven. The Beatitudes are paradoxes, and that they declare as being truly well off the man who, from the ordinary point of view, and perhaps in his own opinion, seems to be most unfortunate. But Jesus refers to man's true well-being, which can often be opposed to his apparent well-being. This surprising opening of his sermon secured to Jesus the attention of the whole message. Though these Beatitudes are flat contradictions of the common worldview, they demonstrate themselves in actual practice to be unquestionably true. Now, just a quick recap on that word blessed or blessed. I know some versions they translate it as happy, but Matthew's gospel is written in Greek, and as we talked about, the original Greek word here is so much deeper than happiness, which is something that is very fleeting, something that constantly changes. We find that the ancient Greeks, well, they use this word, makarios, to describe the perfect state of their gods. There was nothing they needed. Well, they also use this word for the island of Cyprus, sometimes calling it the Blessed Isle. There's a picture of it today. See, many of them thought that it was a place that was so lovely and so fertile and with such a climate that it contained everything you ever needed to be fully satisfied in life. Well, sometimes this word was used by the Greeks for those who were rich. Because, well, they didn't have to worry about food, clothing, and shelter like poor people. But now, according to Jesus, it's not the Greek gods. It's not those who live on the island of Cyprus or the rich. See, it's been said that calling someone Makarios, it's almost like saying, congratulations, you made it. Congratulations to the poor in spirit and so forth. Now, you may be thinking, well, all right, wait a minute. Wasn't Jesus probably speaking in Hebrew or in Aramaic when he gave that sermon? Yes, that's a good possibility. And if that's true, it's often thought that the word that he would have used here for blessed is ashrei, which has to do with contentment and inward joy. It would correspond quite well with the Greek word makarios. See, it's the word that's used in Psalm 1:1. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked. So with that in mind, all right, let's look at our next beatitude. See, last week those was those who mourn. This week it's the meek. Verse 5, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. In your version, it might say humble or gentle. And this beatitude, I suspect it would have been very, very disappointing to those who were looking for the Messiah to be a great military hero to lead them to crush their physical enemies. And meekness, now, that's not a characteristic that's promoted much in our society today either. As a matter of fact, the world's philosophy is often just the opposite. So the world says, and it tells us that you need to exert your power. And even if you don't have power, you need to pretend that you have power. The world tells us that the more we assert ourselves and take charge, the more we manifest our power and ability, the more we show aggression and step on others, well, the more likely we are to succeed. See, those are the ones who inherit the earth. The meek, they're the ones who get trampled on. Son, might makes right. You want something in life, you gotta take it. Winning is everything. Second place is just first place loser. Don't take any guff and don't let anyone push you around. You give them an inch and they'll take a mile. It's a dog-eat-dog world and a nice guy always finishes last. Or as the ancient Greeks would put it, the strong do what they can, and the weak suffer what they must. You see, many people, when they hear that word meekness, they think of weakness, a lack of strength or courage. That's a spineless, pushover doormat kind of person. There was an old comic strip that went from 1925 to 1953 about a man named Casper Milktoast. And the creator, H.T. Webster, described him as the man who speaks softly and gets hit with a big stick. He was a pushover, right? He was a very timid, indecisive, cowardly man. To give an example, one comic, he decided that he had to buy a new hat when the one that he was wearing blew onto a patch of ground that had a keep off the grass sign. You see, he was always letting everyone push him around. He never stood up for himself. He's just a wimp through and through. But that is not at all what this Greek word means, praus. It means power under control. This word was sometimes used to describe a wild animal that was tamed and brought under control. For example, okay, an ox has got just great strength, the ability to cause all kinds of damage, but one with this characteristic allows itself to be yoked and directed. See, this is a horse broken only to the bit. A wild stallion, right, could easily kick and kill you, but think of catching one and bringing it home and taming it. You see, a tamed horse is just as strong as a wild horse. It can run just as fast. It can jump just as high. Unlike weakness, meekness is a conscious choice. It's having the power to do something, but restraining from it. Power under control. Like that William Shakespeare line, "Oh, it is excellent to have a giant's strength, but it is tyrannous to use it like a giant." Well, here's something I thought was good. All right, I'd like to read you this illustration that was shared in John Dixon's book, Humilitas. Three young men hopped on a bus in Detroit in the 1930s and tried to pick a fight with a lone man sitting at the back of the vehicle. They insulted him. He didn't respond. They turned up the heat of the insults. He said nothing. Eventually, the stranger stood up. He was bigger than they had estimated from his seated position, much bigger. He reached into his pocket, handed them his business card, and walked off the bus and then on his way. As the bus drove on, the young men gathered around the car to read the words, "Joe Lewis, Boxer." They had just tried to pick a fight with the man who would be the heavyweight boxing champion of the world from 1937 to 1949. I believe that's the record. The number one boxer of all time, according to the International Boxing Research Organization. Second on the list is Muhammad Ali. Here is a man of immense power and skill, capable of defending his honor with a single devastating blow, yet he chooses to forgo his status and hold his power for others, in this case, for some very fortunate young men. See, that story, okay, that is a perfect example of meekness. You see, a meek person is in complete control of his or her actions. Part of it has to do with keeping our composure and enduring all things with an even temper. Baker's Dictionary of Christian Ethics says, "The meek man does not fight for his own rights or insist upon vindication of his personal honor. He does not repay in kind when injustices are done to him. His is not the spirit of retribution." The opposite of meekness is when we kick and rage against everything that comes our way that we don't like, everything that seems unfair. Someone without the quality of meekness is prone to outbursts of anger. They're ruled by their passions and emotions. See, I know some of the sweetest Christians who turn into a demon when they get behind the wheel of a car. That road rage can be very unchristlike. It can lead to some really bad things. Now, in contrast, you might think of the big, burly man gently carrying a baby. Power under control. All right, so what do we find in the New Testament? Well, we find this word used in connection with wisdom in James 3:13. "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom." There's our word. See, foolish people, they're often rude and abrasive. It's like a bull in a china shop. And of course, anyone can act like that. It's said to be a quality that's important for ministers. Paul, he was talking to the young evangelist Timothy about some things to be careful about, like the love of money. And he said, "Flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness." Well, we're to have this quality when dealing with our brethren. Ephesians 4:2, "With all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing forbearance for one another in love." In Galatians 6, Paul used this word when speaking of trying to restore an erring brother or sister. "Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness." And he used it in a similar way in 2 Timothy chapter 2 when trying to study with someone. "The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness, correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth." Don't just squash them. And Peter used that word in 1 Peter 3 when he was talking about Christian apologetics. "Sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and respect. But it's not just our brethren. It's not just those we want to convert. Well, we need to demonstrate this quality in general, right, when it comes to all the people around us. Paul, he's given this bullet list of teachings, and he said we are to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. Titus 3:2. Now, some people like to point to Boaz in the Old Testament book of Ruth, you know, as an example of meekness or gentleness. I'm sure you remember. Okay, Ruth, her husband had died, and she was taking care of her mother-in-law, you know, even though she didn't have to, but she wanted to do that. And so she had to glean the leftover grain from the fields of local landowners. That was something that the poor would do in that culture. Of course, she ended up in Boaz's field. And, well, instead of using his power to tell her to get out of here, you'll go glean somewhere else, or to mistreat her or belittle her, he was very gentle with her. And he praised her for what she was doing with her mother-in-law. And he fed her lunch, and he told his men to leave her alone, to treat her well. And because of his gentleness and his kindness, well, Boaz and Ruth, they became an item. And they ended up getting married. And so it's been pointed out, if Boaz had been ruthless, he would have been ruthless. Gentleness is an attractive quality. I've also heard it said, gentlemen are gentle men. But gentleness is not just attractive in men, okay? Also in women. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God, 1 Peter 3. And so to all of our young ladies, I'm sorry to tell you, but your physical beauty, it is perishable, no matter how much plastic surgery you get, which can actually sometimes make it worse. On the other hand, okay, these qualities, like gentleness, they're not. Don't forget to focus on your unfading beauty, which is not only precious in the sight of God, it's also very attractive to many men. And to our young men, okay, physical beauty, it's nice, but I have heard of so many marriages that have failed because they simply married the person for their looks. They married them for their physical beauty and not the hidden person of the heart. And you know, they married a pushy, overbearing, mean woman. Now again, all right, this word, it was often used for an animal that had been domesticated and under word of command. And so here's another aspect of it. I think this person is not just self-controlled, but God-controlled. Thy will, not mine, be done. You see, God has his will, and I have my will. And, well, I have the choice of being meek and submitting to his will, or of being self-willed and simply doing what I want to do. I mean, he gives us free choice. James 1:21. Therefore, putting aside filthiness and all the remains of wickedness, in humility or meekness, okay, that's our word in the Greek, receive the word implanted, which is able to save your soul. See, this is the surrenderer to God. As we can see from history, that no war ends without unconditional surrender. So we must be toward God. This person is not defensive, not proud, but will let God control. And again, it's not done out of weakness, but out of humility and self-restraint. Okay, let's think about Jesus. Jesus had the infinite resources of God at his disposal, you know, at his command. And yet he always kept his power under control. And he was gentle with those who were his enemies, even though he could have reduced them to ashes. Jesus didn't want to go to the cross, as we can see from his prayers in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he didn't have to. Remember what he said to Peter when Peter tried to protect him, you know, cut off Malchus's ear. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels. You know, Matthew 26. A legion was normally 6,000 troops. That makes this 72,000 angels. And the song just says 10,000 because it rolls off the tongue better. But can you imagine having that much power and yet letting people do to you what he let them do to him? He didn't want to, and he didn't have to, but he submitted anyway. My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done. Very, very different from the world's philosophy, which is often you do whatever you're big enough to do. You know, whatever you can get away with, get away with it. Matthew 21:5, and quoting Zechariah, say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you gentle and mounted on a donkey. I read that the horse was typically viewed as an animal of war, the donkey as an animal of peace. Jesus came on a lowly, unintimidating donkey, not as a conquering military hero on a war horse. You know, the Apostle Paul, he started 2 Corinthians chapter 10 by saying, now I, Paul, myself, urge you by the meekness, and that's our word, and gentleness of Christ. And there's a different word for gentleness. How are we going to be like Christ if we, you know, we just got this haughty spirit that's ready to crush anyone who is in opposition to us? Jesus said things like, whoever slaps you on the right cheek, you know, speaking of an insult slap, turn to him the other also. Matthew 5:39. That is a very difficult passage for manly men to follow, probably for many women as well. And so let's go back to our beatitude. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Those with this surrendered, meek nature will inherit the earth. That's quite a statement. It's always intrigued me. So what does it mean? I've been asked that question quite a few times. I don't know for sure. So I'm just going to give you a few possibilities. Is it like, maybe it's just like a proverb, meaning that those other people, they're going to eventually kill each other off. You know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Or, well, if you translate the word earth as land, which it can be, it would adapt into the Jewish idea in passages like Psalm 37 and of the covenant of blessings and cursings in Deuteronomy 28 through 30. And see, I suspect the possession of the promised land would have been on their minds, which to them was the highest of blessings. And so this could be a way of saying, blessed are those who surrender to God and are gentle with others, for they will inherit the highest of blessings. Or, well, it could mean that God will take care of our physical needs, as he would say later in Matthew chapter 6. Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing? But the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. And so those who are meek will receive the things they need for their earthly sojourn. Or it could mean that they will inherit the new earth. Okay, spoiler alert. All right, let me read you a little bit about what's going to happen at the end of time. 2 Peter 3. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning and the elements will melt with intense heat? But according to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. And Revelation 21, verses 1 through 4, it also talks about that. Sometimes I wonder if he meant that we will enjoy or we will inherit the joys of the earth. What do I mean by that? Now, here's something I've shared with you before. When I was living in California, And I would sit on the sand dunes and watch the sun going down on the ocean, and the dolphins playing in the waves, or the, you know, the whales off in the distance. I would truly feel as if I had inherited the earth. I wasn't trying to hoard as much of the earth as possible, and in doing so, never becoming satisfied, but I was just enjoying all of it, realizing that God has given all of it to me for my benefit. 1 Corinthians 3, for all things belong to you, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or things present or things to come. All things belong to you, and you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. You see, I recognize that I belong to Christ and that he causes all things. He causes everything to be used for my benefit. Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God. And so I think that Christians, with this quality of meekness, they have the greatest capacity to enjoy the blessings that God provides. And so meekness or gentleness that needs to characterize our attitude and our relationship with God, and it needs to characterize our relationship with those we interact with from day to day, whether that's our brethren, our family, our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, or even our enemies. Remember Romans 12, 17 through 21. It says, never pay back evil for evil. Never take your own revenge. And that's exactly what this word is talking about. Okay, it's when we have the power to hurt our enemies, but we don't. We leave the punishment to God, and then we deal with them in a gentle way. Now, all right, so you don't get confused. Okay, we're still supposed to stand up for justice and for what is right and to protect others. It's not talking about that, okay? It's talking about using our power to get revenge or to assert our own selfish will, where the main objective is to get my way by any means necessary, or to get to the top by whatever, you know, whatever means are necessary. And here's the thing. When you assert yourself, when you trample on others, yeah, you may win some small victories for yourself. Yay, I got my way. But besides causing your family, coworkers, and neighbors to probably dislike you, in the end, you are not going to achieve the ultimate victory offered by Jesus. And so our challenge for this week is for each of us, well, first to memorize this passage. Memorize this verse, and then try really hard this week to be meek. Okay, next week. Next week, we're going to continue on. We're going to look at those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And again, these are certainly not easy. But the benefits, I believe that the benefits of having these qualities, these attitudes to be what God wants us to be, they outweigh anything this world has to offer us or any persecution it might inflict. And so looking at your life and me looking at mine, do we have these qualities? Well, if not, we can change. You see, we can work on them. In conclusion, let's turn over real quick, and I want to read here how Jesus finished this sermon. In Matthew 7, verses 24 through 27. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and slammed against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. So may God bless each of us as we strive to become a true disciple of His.